Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Pool season is just kicking off in Columbus, and with 8 community pools in the city, plus many pools in the surrounding suburbs, Central Ohioans have a lot of options to choose from. And safety, of course, is an area of focus for all public pools. 2 years ago, the City of Columbus conducted a study that looked at its current pools and adjustments that should be made. One of the recommendations was either to improve the current pools or to also build some new ones. We're going to get an update on the summer swim season in Columbus today with Marissa Angeletta, the Aquatics Administrative Manager for Columbus Recreation and Parks. Welcome to All Sides, Marissa.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
So your outdoor swim season was delayed slightly because of an unusually cold Memorial Day weekend. How are things going now? Did it warm up?
Yes, it did warm up, thankfully, and we got lots of folks in the water over the weekend. So we're happy that everyone is finally ready for pool season. But yeah, definitely an interesting start to the year.
Yeah, it was an unusually cold May, so your water never had time to warm up.
Yeah, super cold overnight temperatures made our water super cold, and then the air temperature wasn't really warm either, so we inevitably had to delay just for safety.
Yeah. And now, did you have to delay any swim lessons that you offer? Do you offer them the first week that the pool's open?
Yeah, we don't offer swim lessons. Our first day of swim lessons for the summer season was planned to be tomorrow, and those are going to go off as according to plan.
Okay. Well, good thing you waited a week to have those anyway.
Yes, for sure.
Now, I know that hiring lifeguards is sometimes a challenge to have enough of them and have them trained in time. How was your lifeguard situation this year?
Yeah, we look pretty good. We have one class that's happening this week to catch some folks who maybe were still in school last week or traveling back from college. So we've got about 40 people mm-hmm. in a class right now. It should be our last class of the season, which hopefully will get us to about 200 guards for the year.
Okay. And I mean, I know that, you know, post-pandemic, back in like 21, 22 kind of years, it was harder to find lifeguards. Mm-hmm. Have you made up for all of that?
Yeah, definitely. Columbus has really been supportive of us in allowing us to raise the pay rate of our staff. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really made all the difference in making sure that we have a full lifeguard team at all of our sites.
Okay. Now, I did mention this aquatic study, the study of pools mm-hmm. that the city did. It was back in 2023. So the study came out in May of 2023. And so it's been 2 years. And I just wanted to get an update. What sort of improvements to existing pools have we seen in the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think the last time I was here, we were maybe finishing up the renovation of two of our sites. Mm-hmm. So those two sites were Windsor Pool and Glenwood Pool. And those got totally renovated and opened up in 2023. So that was really exciting. We are going to renovate Marion Franklin Swimming Pool this winter. So we're really excited about that. And we're really close on getting a timeline on renovation of the Tuttle Swimming Pool, which is our remaining kind of older facility that has yet to be renovated. So we're looking really good on that. And then we also started the design of a new aquatic center.
Yes. Okay. So let's start with backing up to the two outdoor pools. Then we'll move to the indoor pool. So you recently renovated two pools, and mm-hmm. then there were still two more on the list that your yep. study identified. So one of those is happening this winter. But yep. then Tuttle Pool, did there have to be a delay? Did it involve that construction project that's really close to Tuttle?
Well, that definitely has made things more complicated, having mm-hmm. a side-by-side project. Thankfully, it's a city project, too. Mm-hmm. But we have all the designs done for Tuttle, so it's ready to be started from a construction perspective as soon as the funding becomes available. So we're ready to hit the ground running whenever that's available.
Yeah, your study in 23 identified Tuttle as past its usable life. Yeah. So what's the holdup with the funding? Is it the city that you need more money from?
Yeah, we're just waiting on funding from city council, mayor's office, that sort of thing. So we did get the funding for Marion Franklin. Mm-hmm. So we'll be starting that project. And then hopefully we'll have the funding for Tuttle soon.
Okay. So that's a part of the plan, just hasn't actually been allocated quite yet.
Yeah. The design and construction money was already allocated. So we mm-hmm. got all those plans set and we're just waiting on the actual construction
okay.
money.
Now, your study from May of 2023 also identified that the city did not have enough indoor pools for the size of this city.
Yeah.
Which, because we only have one, right?
Right.
So what was needed when it comes to indoor pools?
Well, the study indicated we needed more than just one additional mm-hmm. indoor pool. So we're definitely going to try to build at least one very large indoor pool to start mm-hmm. and then tackle the rest from there. But we are going to, try to really right size this new facility so that we're making up for more than, you know, maybe just one additional pool similar size to what we have.
Now, so you said that this is in the works to build this new pool. Tell me about where you are in the process.
Yeah, so we started the design process of it already. We're working really hard at that. So just in the thick of getting the actual design done, and then we'll move forward with construction straight away after that. So it'll still be a few years before it's built, but definitely things are moving.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you said a few years. Is that 2 years? Is that 3 years?
We're projecting that by the end of 2028 that we will have a facility.
Mm, okay, so
that
3 years.
Now, right now it's going to be quite a large facility and big project. So mm-hmm. It definitely is going to take more than a few years of construction work.
Do you have a location mapped out?
Yeah, it's going to be on the northeast side of Columbus. We're in a partnership with Columbus City Schools, who is giving us and leasing us a portion of land where Mifflin Middle School certainly is right now, that lower portion of that land.
Okay. So kind of next to Mifflin Middle School.
Yes.
Okay. So basically the study was just comparing cities of this size and how many pools they have. So did it identify that Columbus doesn't have enough both indoor pools and outdoor pools?
Yes. It did. Yeah. Both of those. So hopefully when we complete all these renovations of our outdoor pools, we'll be adding to our inventory with new sites. Mm-hmm. And we're also have 3 spray grounds that are in development as well. So mm-hmm. we're going to try to add to at least some cool off places with spray grounds as well in the meantime before we get more outdoor pools.
Yeah. Spray grounds were another thing that that Columbus Recreation and Parks manages. How many spray grounds do we have?
So we have 3 spray grounds and 4 fountains. Mm. So they are kind of different, but the actual kind of recreation fun spray grounds, we have 4 of them.
Okay. And have those gotten any upgrades recently? I know there was a lot of work on the one at the Scioto Mile.
Yeah, so that one's a fountain, and that one's actually managed by the Columbus Development Corp.
Oh, you don't manage that one?
No.
Okay.
We do own that
property.
When
I hear spray ground, I just think any fountain that spits water at you. Okay.
Yeah. And so we do own that property. They manage it, though. And in the past, we have run that, but they now manage that property for us.
Okay. So where are the spray grounds that you do manage?
So we have one at Linden Community Center, which is our newest one. We have one at Blackburn Community Center, one at Barnett Community Center, and one at Scioto Southland.
Okay. I would have to think that if the city lacks pools for our size, if we're down on pools, both indoor and outdoor, a spray ground would be less of a footprint and maybe easier to build. Is Columbus Rec and Parks looking at that as an alternative?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if alternative is the right word, but more like a quick kind of, it's quicker to get them built. It's a little bit less expensive. And so we're able to get them added into projects a lot easier. So that's why we're able to get, we have 3 in development right now. That way we're able to kind of quickly address that in that community if they don't have a pool yet. But they definitely aren't a solve for not having a pool. We still want to add more swimming pools.
Right. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking about Columbus City Pools with Marissa Angeletta, the Aquatics Administrative Manager for Columbus Recreation and Parks. Sorry, lots of A words there.
Yes.
Aquatics Administrative Manager, I got it. So your aquatics plan also, whenever you read the plan, it asks the question, why plan for aquatics? So can you tell me, why do we need a pool plan? Why study how many pools there are?
Yeah, well, Columbus is growing, which is no secret. And so that means that people need more swimming opportunities for lots of reasons. Swimming and spray grounds are really important in neighborhoods that may not have the same amenities like air conditioning that other places have. So those are a really important summertime cool off place for people and residents. And it's also really important that everybody learns how to swim. And so we can't teach everyone how to swim if we don't have enough swimming pools to teach them in.
Yeah. So the plan mentions the reason for a pool plan is water safety, health and well-being, right? And then it also mentions strong neighborhood pride.
Yeah.
Is there pride behind having a pool near you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think our pools are kind of the focus of the neighborhoods in the summer. It's where people gather. It's where people get to reunite after the school year. So they're really, really critical just for gathering and having a safe space to gather in those communities.
We're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about swim safety, drowning prevention, the importance of swim lessons. But the City of Columbus does offer swim lessons at its pools. Are most of them full most of the time?
So our indoor aquatic swim lessons are very popular and typically do fill up. And those happen year round. our outdoor pools, they are not always full. So there's usually room for those, for people to get into those last minute. I definitely encourage people to go out and go to the site closest to them to see if there's space available. But generally, they don't fill up in the summertime.
Now, how important is it that people of all ages take the leap, dive in the pool, yeah. take the swim lessons? Do you have lessons for all ages?
Yes, all ages. And we do that year round. It's critical. It's important that young kids learn how to swim. It's important that adults learn how to swim. So it's definitely a skill that I think is becoming more relevant in people's minds. I think people thought of it as a luxury skill before, and now people are understanding that it is really a safety skill and everyone needs to know.
And do you hear from, I mean, not that we're going to have you judge suburban or neighborhood pools, yeah. but I do know that your swim lessons are arguably more affordable than other swim lessons.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. And that's really important to us in general, is having accessibility and affordability, mm-hmm. not just with swim lessons, but anything we do. So, yeah, in the summer, swim lessons at most would be $15 a session, but mm-hmm. we do discount that down to $0 for any family who needs. So in the summer, we would never turn anyone away.
And have you noticed, is there a division in the swim lessons? Because I have some statistics here that mm-hmm. says that more than 60% of African Americans, more than 45% of Hispanics have low or no swim ability. Mm-hmm. That's a nationwide number. I don't yeah. know what it is for Columbus, but do you notice that there's a discrepancy in who knows how to swim?
Definitely. I think that's just, I mean, this statistics for the United States, I think, are relevant in Columbus mm-hmm. as well. And I think that's why that accessibility and affordability is so important to us, is to make sure that anyone who needs them has the opportunity to take swim lessons.
Yeah. Do you find that sometimes parents will put their kids in swim lessons and then just the lifeguards find out the parents don't know how to swim too?
That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yes. Lots of adults will share, like, I know how important swim lessons are. I put my kids in them, but they don't know how to swim themselves. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty robust teen and adult swim lesson program as well.
Okay. Yeah. I can imagine if you're an adult, you don't want to be in a swim lesson with kids. So is there adult only?
Yes. And we separated out teens as well, because, mm-hmm. you know, if you're a teenager, you don't want to be with the 10-year-olds either. Mm-hmm. And the teenagers probably don't want to be with the adults and vice versa. And those learning styles are different. So we do separate those out.
What's the lowest age you can do a swim lesson?
We have parent-child swim lessons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever your physician recommends is an appropriate time to get in the water. But we typically recommend 6 months.
6 months.
As the youngest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then when does the parent not get in the pool and the kid goes by themselves?
Yeah, independent swim lessons start at 3 years old.
Okay.
So pretty young.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to ask you something that is sometimes confusing to people. The pools have gone cashless recently.
And
you have to have a leisure card to get in. So can you explain a little bit about the leisure card, where you mm-hmm. get one, how you get in, that kind of thing?
Yeah, the leisure card process has remained the same over the past couple of years. So you can get a leisure card at any recreation center or aquatic center site. So anytime you're at a facility that has staff there, they should be able to assign a leisure card to you. And I think the misconception is you have to have a physical card. You know, we give you a physical card, but you just have to have a leisure profile basically set up in your account, and we can always
search at the pool, they can look up your name.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. If you've lost that little card, that's not a big deal. So as long as you have that leisure kind of profile set up, you can enter the pool.
Now, I've been around for a long time. I can remember where it was like you had to have a leisure card and you had to have a dollar.
Yeah. So
is that still the case?
Yes. It's still $1 to get in. Like I said, that accessibility is really critical to us. So we haven't raised the prices. We don't have a plan as of right now to raise the prices. So it is $1 to get in, and we have made the decision to go cashless for the first time ever.
So how do you pay the dollar then?
Yeah.
Online?
You can in person pay with card, debit, credit card. We now take tap to pay. That was a big, reason we decided that we were able to make this change, a change we've been wanting to make. But now that we're able to take that digital wallet format, that helped us feel more comfortable doing that. And then you can also preload your leisure card with entries online or in person. So if you really need to pay with cash, you can go to an aquatic center or to the aquatic center or a rec center and preload your leisure card with cash. And then when you come in, you just scan your card.
Does that mean your concession stands also are no cash anymore too?
We don't have concessions.
Oh,
we only
okay.
have vending machines.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So the idea of the $1 to get mm-hmm. in, you want it to be accessible. But I mean, I could argue and say, we just talked about the need for more pools, and you could have more money for pools or pool renovations if you charge more.
Yeah. Well, we feel really strongly that it's important that people have access to the pool. That's mm-hmm. the most important thing. Like I said, we do get a lot of support from city council and the mayor's office. And so at this time, we don't have a big need to raise the price. And we also don't charge on Operation Cooldown days. So when it's super hot, we just don't charge at all.
Mm-hmm. And to get a leisure card, you have to be a Columbus City resident. Can anyone go to the pool?
Yeah, anyone can come to the pool. Yep.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Anyone can pay the dollar, but you have to get the leisure card. So if you live in Hilliard or Dublin or whatever, you have to get a leisure card, though.
Yeah, you still have to get one of those mm-hmm. at one of our sites. Yep.
Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to tell me about this upcoming swim season that you're excited about?
I mean, we are excited that we're cashless. We think it's going to make the process smoother. Mm-hmm. It's definitely going to be safer for our team members, which is really important to us. You know, just to encourage people to get out to the pools and check online before you go to make sure the one you want to go to is open. And we expect it to be a busy summer, though.
How does it make it safer for your team members? Is it just not dealing with cash is safer?
Yeah.
Don't have cash on hand.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, got it. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
We've been talking with Marissa Angeletta, the Aquatics Administrative Manager for Columbus Recreation and Parks. And coming up, we're going to be talking about the importance of learning to swim. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Summer is here, and a popular activity during the summer months, of course, is swimming. But it is important to learn how to swim. Swim lessons are not just for kids. Everyone should learn swimming basics so they can be safe in the water. Recent data shows that 64% of African-American children have low or no swimming ability. That number is 45% for Hispanic children. Brian Boatsman is the head coach and owner of Unified Aquatics Club, an organization for swimmers of all ages. He is also the only African-American swim coach, one of the only African-American swim coaches in the area. He formerly coached the swimming and diving program at the Columbus School for Girls and was named Division II State Coach of the Year in 2020. Welcome back to All Sides, Brian.
Thanks for having me back, Amy. I'm glad you said one of the few because we actually...
Yes, I meant one of the few. I just misread my own writing, you know. You know how that is.
No, that's okay, because we have three on our team, so...
Oh, excellent. So swimming is increasingly being talked about as a life skill, not just a sport, not just a fun activity. What are the basics that kids should have when it comes to what they need to learn from swim lessons?
Well, from swim lessons, they should learn that they can float, that what they should be looking for in terms of water safety. They need to make sure that they always have supervision. A lot of times kids who have some confidence get near water, but the supervision's not there. Mm-hmm. And within a very short period of time, a kid can go under.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about adults? You note that anyone around water, whether it's swimming, fishing at a lake, or if you're boating, everyone needs to be aware of basic swimming survival skills. Do you find that there are a group of adults who just don't know how to swim and never learned?
Yes, I run into them all the time. When people find out that I coach swimming, I run into a lot of parents who've never had a swim lesson, have a fear of water, and even sometimes take their kids on vacation and don't go up above their knees. And so they need to learn as well, because if their kid has difficulty, they're probably going to be the first one on site.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you feel like at this point, you know, we're in June here, is it too late to sign up for swim lessons, or is any time a good time to be signing up for lessons?
Any time's a good time to sign up for lessons. There's so many more pools opened up in the Columbus area So there's more opportunities with the outdoor pools. And I know a lot of people that I talk to, we're trying to get more exposure to get families out and learn how to swim before they go out to a lake or on a boat.
Have you taught, I know you teach kids, obviously, but have you taught adults swim lessons? How is it different? Do you find, are adults more nervous than kids?
I wouldn't say, actually, you know what, they are. Mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit of like maybe trauma in the sense that if they had an issue when they were young and they've gone decades without going into water, there's more nerves. Kids are a little bit more confident. Mm-hmm. They sometimes think they're good swimmers, even if they're not. But yes, adults, usually it's better to work with them in small groups. And we spend half the time just talking about what the issues are before we even get in the water.
And do you teach them, you know, you said floating is important. You know, back in my day, we all learned how to tread water and we had to be able to tread water for a minute. Is that still the standard?
I think treading water is very important. I don't know if it has to be for a minute. Mm-hmm. You never know how long you might be in the lake, but I think floating is probably the most important thing, relaxing, floating on your back or floating on your front and taking very small breaths. But treading water can actually really tire you out. So the more anxiety you have, the more you're going to, you know, be tired.
Yeah, maybe it's just an early 90s thing that treading water was the trend.
Yeah.
Unified Aquatics Club swims at Columbus School for Girls, and you work there as the operations manager. What ages do you teach?
Well, for the Unified, we go as early as 4 years old. So if they can swim across the pool, they can join the competitive swim team. At Columbus School for Girls, they have a preschool there, and all the preschool students actually have an aquatics program that they do in the spring.
Okay. So so at that school, do you learn to swim as a part of the school day, or is it separate?
Oh, it's part of the school day. So my daughter is actually going to be a first grader, and one of her favorite parts is being a part of the aquatics program. They do a great job of teaching kids how to swim at a very early age, and they get in the pool at least once a week during the spring.
That's amazing. I would think that parents would love the idea of swim lessons being a part of the school day. That seems easier than going to a half an hour swim lesson at a pool 20 minutes away.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's tough with Columbus because, you know, we have tens of thousands of Columbus City School students mm-hmm. who don't have regular access. But I know there are some schools that are trying to do to find facilities, Y programs, stuff like that, where they can use, you know, swim lessons.
Now, that you just mentioned the access to pools. For your swim lessons that you offer specifically, do you have open slots or are you all full right now?
I'm not full. I have many people that want to participate. The hardest thing to do is find volunteers because everyone's so busy. But we have pool access in Groveport, Eastmore, and Columbus School for Girls. And so we'll be putting out some information here soon, but I'm going to be looking for a lot of volunteers so we can help as many kids and families as possible.
Now, what about that pool access that you mentioned? We were talking with Columbus Recreation and Parks just a few minutes ago, and they did a pool study back in 2023 that said that Columbus does not have enough pools to meet the needs of the growing city. We need more outdoor pools. We need more indoor pools. They have a plan where they're renovating two pools and they're building a new indoor aquatic center, but that's going to take 3 years to build. So do you find that Central Ohio doesn't have enough pools?
Oh, definitely inside of 270. Mm-hmm. So as you go out, there's more opportunities for privately owned pools. But in terms of our Columbus City School students, there's not enough access, at least until the outdoor pools open up. And even then, it's hard.
And what about the affordability? Because I'll just speak from my own experience. My kids learned to swim at Goldfish Swim School, which I will tell you is not cheap.
They do a great job. My daughter started there, and it is tough for families that are, you know, don't have the means to do that. That's why free swim lessons that are offered by groups like the Y, Red Cross, you know, I have a nonprofit as well. Sometimes coaches will offer free lessons too, but it is very difficult to find affordable or free lessons.
Yes. So, but there are affordable and free lessons out there. Columbus offers lessons that she said that they start at $15, but you can also apply for them to even less than $15. But you have to just find them. She said that their indoor lessons always fill up, but once the outdoor pools open, if you can stand the cold, you can learn to swim outside, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It takes a couple of weeks for those outdoor pools to heat up.
Yeah. So what makes swimming education difficult to access for so many people? Is it the cost of the swim lessons, or is it to access to a pool, or is it that you don't have the time to drive to a pool that's 20 minutes away?
I think it's all of the above. Pools are very expensive to build. And once you do have a facility, they usually get rented up by other groups. It's also hard to find instructors. A lot of your instructors that start at age 17, 18, then move on to college jobs and careers and stuff like that. But, you know, luckily we have a really good swimming culture in Columbus, mm-hmm. a lot of great teams, a lot of great coaches, and hopefully we can get to where we were pre-COVID with just some groups that go out to local pools and get free lessons. That was one of my favorite things was just to go to, you know, community pools and do a clinic for the coaches and the kids that went there.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about swim lessons and water safety with Brian Boatsman, owner and head coach of Unified Aquatics Club. In my introduction, I mentioned that 45% of Hispanic children and 64% of African-American children have low or no swim ability. Do those percentages surprise you?
Not at all. You know, it's unfortunate that it's a sport that's not easily accessible to certain groups. And socioeconomically, it's the same thing. Some families can't afford it. And it is nice if you do have access to a pool or your own pool or access to your own private coaches. It does provide an opportunity for your kids to be safe at an early age.
Now, swimming for years has been viewed as an upper middle class white sport. Do you feel like that narrative is changing? And if not, what will it take to change it?
I think it's changing a lot. USA Swimming has done a great job. They have outreach programs. They give opportunities for families like the Y does. If you can't afford certain things, there's grants out there as well for teams. It's changing, but just probably not as quickly as people might think it should. Like if you look at some of the club teams, they're not going to be in the greater Columbus area. They're going to be in suburbs. They're going to be at private schools where they have those pools. There's a great summer league program, and I think we just need to kind of merge our efforts to get some of those kids to see that year-round swimming can be a huge benefit.
Now, you mentioned that in 2021, as we were still in the pandemic, you did offer free swimming lessons to those who couldn't afford them. And you're hoping to relaunch those, but what do you need to be able to restart offering these free lessons?
I think the biggest thing is just finding another small group of individuals who want to be a part of this. A lot of my great volunteers that helped me out a couple of years ago are now off doing other things. So I need to reach out to even kids on my team, get them interested. I think once you do one lesson, you see how beneficial it is to the family. Every kid that came in there, even if they were crying initially, didn't want to leave. They just were having so much fun, and the attention was, that they were given was great.
Yes. And you mentioned that sometimes kids have a fear. Maybe they don't want to jump in the pool. The swim lessons are intimidating. What role can parents play in removing that fear, not just for the children, but for themselves, too?
I think for them, it's just like allowing the instructors to have some one-on-one time with the kids, building up that trust. And again, I've been doing this for 30 plus years. You know, I'm not going to take a kid and then ask them to jump in off the side. You know, we're going to start off just by sitting, maybe just their ankles in the water, building that trust, getting them the right tools to be confident and relaxed.
Now, I've seen in recent years puddle jumpers, the intense floaties. So it's not just floaties on the arms. It goes across your chest now. Like, there's a lot more of them. A lot of kids have them. Pools offer them. Are those helpful? Are they good? Or are they making more kids give them a false sense of security? Or they're saying, well, I don't need swim lessons. I can just wear my puddle jumper.
Yeah, I'm not a real big fan of that type of device. I'm sure that there's a great need, especially if you don't have a lifeguard nearby and you want your kids to be in the water with you. If you're still watching them, that's fine. But when we do our lessons, we start off with no equipment at all. It's just about learning how to float in the water just with the instructor. And eventually we teach them about life jackets that are certified that you do want to use when you're on a boat, canoe, stuff like that. But we want the kids to learn how to float and tread water on their own.
Right. And are there any other aspects of drowning prevention that people don't typically think of? One that Instagram has been telling me a lot about lately is the color of my kid's swimsuit. I'm constantly seeing awareness videos that my kids need to be wearing a swimsuit that makes them be able to be easily spotted. So tell me, why is a blue swimsuit bad? Tell me.
Well, it depends on where you're at. Like, you know, blue swimsuit could kind of blend on to the surroundings of the pool, and it's very hard to see. If you're out in an ocean, maybe something more brightly colored, like bright orange, bright yellow. So when your kids are kind of in the ocean, you can see that where they're at. A brightly colored swim cap can help as well. You know, something that is neon green or orange or something like that versus something that's just black while you're in the ocean.
So you're anti-puddle jumper and pro-bright colored swimsuit? Is that what?
Yeah, I think it's just like, so I have kids come to swim lessons who think they can swim, even like 5, 6, because they've always worn one of those. Mm. And then they get in the water and they start to have anxiety. So again, I think that it has a purpose, but you should learn how to do your lessons without any kind of flotation device.
And when we're supervising kids in the water, are there any unsafe practices to watch out for that don't typically get attention? If you're teaching people what to watch out for, how do you know if a kid is, you know, actually in trouble?
I think basically what you need to do is make sure that your pool is safe, the gates are lockable, and there's equipment that can be thrown to somebody if they're having difficulties. Sometimes kids will play around and they'll act like they're, you know, having some difficulties. But once they submerge or they're having trouble keeping their head above water, then that's when they need assistance. You should have something that's a floatable device that can be thrown to them, a life jacket, a rope with a floaty on it. But number one thing you should have is supervision. I took my kids to a graduation party and they hired a lifeguard just basically to watch the pool. Mm-hmm. Because that way people could do their thing and socialize, but you need someone who's watching the pool the entire time.
Mm. Are there any changes you'd like to see to how swimming safety is treated or taught, either in Ohio or across the United States? Is there anything we can do to make it better?
I really wish we could have it be mandatory as part of our phys ed department. We do a lot of things, and you know, Columbus does build some more indoor pools. Maybe there's an opportunity for kids of one grade to all get swim lessons through the phys ed department. It's hugely beneficial for schools that can offer it.
Well, that was Brian Boatsman, head coach and owner of Unified Aquatics Club. Thank you so much for your time, Brian. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Amy. Thank you.
And coming up, we're going to hear about what's being done around the country to promote water safety. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money Podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Safe swimming and water safety training are critical to prevent a day on the water from turning into tragedy. Swimming training and other safety practices save thousands of lives each year, particularly of young people. With that in mind, both government initiatives and independent organizations have worked hard in recent years to promote this important education and save lives. Still, more can be done to promote safe water activities and ensure that the fun in the sun stays that way. Joining me now is Megan Ferrero, chair of the United States National Water Safety Action Plan and the executive director of the national water safety nonprofit, the Zach Foundation. Megan, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me.
So what has your organization, it's called the United States National Water Safety Action Plan. What has that done to promote safe swimming and water safety education?
The U.S. National Water Safety Action Plan was formed after a call from the World Health Organization that every country should have its own national water safety strategy. And that was in 2014. Some countries took up the charge right away, like Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the UK, and other countries. The United States was a little slower to the table, but in 2018, a group of national nonprofits formed a steering committee to develop the first ever U.S. National Water Safety Action Plan. The effort was comprised of hundreds of stakeholders from across the United States for the development of this plan, which provides recommendations at the federal level for big organizations and government agencies to undertake and to look at gaps and opportunities to improve water safety and drowning prevention strategies. But it also enables states and communities to develop their own unique water safety strategies. We've seen states like California, Hawaii, Texas, Florida, and New Jersey take the charge. New Jersey is going to publish their plan in a few weeks. And we've recently seen members of the field from Ohio joining our monthly office hours to learn more about our strategy and how they can develop a plan for Ohio. We're excited about that.
Yeah. So having a water safety action plan, is that something that should be federal or is it more likely to be state or local, like each city should have one?
So we believe that each state and each community should have one. Every state in the United States is so different, right? One is very different from the next. And so what works in California will not work in Ohio. And so we believe that members of the field at the state level should come together, look at where drownings are occurring in Ohio. I did some research before our meeting today and found that many of those drownings in Ohio are happening in lakes and in rivers, in what we refer to as open water. And so, you know, when you're thinking about strategies, long-term strategies include developing a state plan, developing community plans. But for those of you that are listening right now and wondering, gee, how do we stay safe this summer? We want you to use Coast Guard approved life jackets anytime you're in open water, whether you're a child or an adult. It's really critical to enable you to float safely should your canoe capsize, should your boat overturn, should you just get stuck when you're out swimming off of a dock. This is for kids and for adults. We know that several adults drowned in Ohio last year in open water, and we want to be sure that we keep all people in Ohio safe when they're around water. We want you to get swimming lessons. We want children and adults to learn how to swim. We want adults to get CPR training. We know if CPR is administered at the time of a drowning, the chance of survival goes up astronomically. We want those life jackets worn. And most importantly, parents, we want you constantly supervising your children anytime they're around open water. If your child doesn't know how to swim, you should be within arm's reach of them. If they do know how to swim, you still need to be watching them. It's the lifeguard is not the first layer of defense, mom and dad, it's you. So please be sure you're thinking about that when you're around water this summer.
I mentioned earlier in the hour that there's some national statistics that show 45% of Hispanic children and more than 60% of African American children have low or no swim ability. Is there anything being done to address the racial and class disparities when it comes to swim lessons?
Yes. So the organization that I run, the Zach Foundation, has partnered with Boys and Girls Clubs of America and the American Red Cross to deliver water safety camps and learn to swim lessons to communities all across the United States. Our program with the American Red Cross not only provides swim lessons for children and adults, it provides that CPR training you heard me talk about. It also trains and certifies lifeguards and water safety instructors. We know that in Ohio, pools opened last weekend. It seems like they were able to do so without any impact from a lifeguard shortage. But if you're in a community that feels like there aren't enough lifeguards, get your young people trained. Get them. They all need jobs, right? I know my teenager's just about to start summer break, and I'm nervous about that. What is he going to do all summer? I'm going to get him lifeguard trained. I'm going to get him into the life cycle of aquatics in my community, into a career path that can really serve him to go in many different directions. It's really an important job, and so a great thing for young people to consider this summer.
Columbus did a study in 2 years ago, in 2023, where it found, it was an aquatic study, and it found for the size of our city and for how rapidly it's growing, we don't have enough pools. We don't have enough outdoor pools, not enough indoor pools. They're working on that, but, you know, building a pool is expensive. And so have you found that it's access to swim lessons is a part of the barrier? Without having a pool close by, people don't think they need swim lessons?
I think access is an issue. Transportation is an issue. And to be frank, the cost of swim lessons is an issue. Mm-hmm. But there are low cost opportunities. The other piece of the puzzle is that there is a generational fear that we've really been working on breaking. I think what we find is when parents and grandparents don't know how to swim, they're less likely to enroll their children and grandchildren into swimming lessons. And that happens most often because they're afraid they won't be able to save their child when they're in water, so they'd rather just avoid it altogether. And so we're really working closely with our friends at Diversity in Aquatics, which is an incredible organization that focuses on bringing Black and Brown children into the aquatics community, not only from a learn to swim perspective, but to join a swim team, to become a lifeguard, to, you know, see where that lifeguard career could take you for the rest of your life, or to a career in medicine or in public policy. And so there are lots of efforts being made to combat this challenge, this, some people call it a crisis in our country. And we know that drowning is the leading cause of death for kids ages 1 to 4, but it's also the second leading cause of death for children under the age of 14. So it's not a problem that stops once your child learns how to swim. You heard me talk a little bit earlier about life jacket usage when you're in open water. We know that, especially for teen boys, as they age, that rate increases in open water. And so it's a full life cycle of water safety strategies for your community and for your family. One of the things I like to think about when I talk about water safety is, one, it's layers of protection. It's learning to swim. It's adult supervision. If you have a backyard pool, ensuring that that backyard pool has a four-sided isolation fence so that when you think your toddler is sleeping, he can't sneak out and get into the pool. It's wearing those life jackets you heard me talk about. It's ensuring that your pool drain is compliant with federal standards. And it's being aware that water is everywhere. We are so blessed to be able to enjoy the water safely, to be able to enjoy it in a fun way. But we need to know that there are, especially in Ohio, lots of lakes and ponds and rivers, and you need to be aware of the water that's outside your home. I have 4 young kids, and I think about how I can teach my young children, my 10-month-old, that the cup of coffee is hot, no touch, hot. Not to go near the street without holding an adult's hand, not to let the car pull out of the driveway without my seatbelt fastened, not to get onto that bicycle without a helmet. I can also teach my kids not to go near water without an adult. It seems so silly to think about it that way, but I think if you think about all those safety messages that you impart upon your children throughout the course of their life, this is one that needs to be a part of that story.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about swimming safety at a national level with Megan Ferrero from the United States National Water Safety Action Plan. You mentioned you're also the executive director of the Zach Foundation. Can you talk about that? What is the Zach Foundation and how did it start?
Sure. Thank you. So the Zach Foundation is a national nonprofit that was started by Karen and Brian Cohn in 2008. After their 6-year-old son drowned in a pool drain entrapment. So Zachary's arm got stuck to a wall drain in his backyard pool, and sadly, he drowned. And after that happened, the parents were so confused. They knew they had done everything they could to prepare their children. They had given him swimming lessons. He was a strong swimmer. He was closely supervised, but they did not know about drain entrapment. Mm-hmm. And so they decided to dedicate their lives to ensuring that no other family would suffer the horrible tragedy that they and their 3 children experienced that day. And so over the years, they've provided learn to swim classes to more than 25,000 children through Boys and Girls Clubs around the United States. A piece of federal legislation was passed shortly after Zachary died. It's referred to as the VGB, Pool and Spa Safety Act. And that piece of legislation really changed how pool drain covers were built and manufactured. They created standards for how far apart pool drains should be, for as an example. And they really changed the way both the pool industry and safety advocates like themselves interacted with each other. Mm. You heard me talk earlier about that United States National Water Safety Action Plan. Those hundreds of stakeholders were made up not only of affected family members like themselves, but pool experts, aquatics experts, open water experts, folks who have PhDs in water safety and drowning prevention, coming together to develop a unique strategy that will reduce the rate of drownings in the United States as states begin to adopt these approaches and develop unique strategies. So the Zach Foundation was at the forefront of that work. In 2019, they began hosting community drowning prevention action plan meetings in Fairfield County, Connecticut, in Chicago, in St. Louis, and in Central Texas. And those communities were early adopters to this new idea around developing community-wide drowning prevention strategies. They included members of a community, including first responders, teachers, pastors, radio hosts. Anyone that was considered a community leader came together to the Boys and Girls Club of St. Louis, sat down and had a meeting and looked at the risks in their communities, looked at the opportunities. There was a little pocket of money in the transportation budget for the city. So they had children bus to swimming lessons that the American Red Cross and the YMCA were able to provide at a low or no cost. Really thinking about unique strategies, PSAs that radio stations could do to warn families about water safety and drowning prevention heading into the warm summer months. And so really trying to create a unique strategy. And the Zach Foundation has been on the forefront of many of these new strategies and approaches to drowning prevention. They have a children's book, The Polar Bear Who Wouldn't Swim. We have a website with lots of incredible resources at thezachfoundation.org. And really constantly trying to look at the changes that we see in drownings, the trends, the risks, the increases, and changing our strategies to address those.
I was speaking with a swim coach earlier in the hour, and I asked him about what needs to change to get more people to be safe around the water. And he basically said that he wishes that swim lessons were a mandatory part of PE class, physical education class, in the United States. Now, obviously, every elementary school in the United States doesn't have a pool, but he was saying that even just busing kids to a pool would be tremendously helpful. What's your opinion on what can be done to get everyone swim lessons?
Well, getting everyone swim mm-hmm. lessons is the ultimate goal. That's an amazing goal. And it certainly is achievable in certain communities. In the in-between, I think a really great strategy could be bringing dry land water safety curriculum to classrooms. The Zach Foundation has a dry land water safety curriculum that it has recently rolled out in the Orange Unified School District in California. The American Red Cross has dry land curriculum. And this curriculum can be, it's packaged, it's comes with a children's book and is given to teachers, mostly of first and second grade classrooms, where those teachers can deliver these 30-minute learn water safety classes in a classroom setting. There are resources and materials that go home to the family, but it's a way to ensure that we're being realistic about the transportation costs, the funding costs. You mentioned earlier, not enough pools, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're in a community where your resources are strapped, you can teach kids about water safety in a classroom setting. We want everyone to get swimming lessons, but until we get to that point, we can talk to kids about water safety like we talk to them about fire safety. Every October in our country, we bring in fire safety programming to classrooms all across the United States. We want to see that same strategy implemented in May, in National Water Safety Month, before school lets out for summer, ensuring that every kid remembers the rules around the pool, remembers not to go near water without an adult, and that they ask their parents to get them swimming lessons, right? Mm-hmm. We learn so much from our kids, and we have a real opportunity to leverage those learnings and those in-classroom opportunities for ensuring that families understand the importance of learn to swim.
And tell me about getting adults swim lessons. If you never learned to swim as a kid, it's never too late. But how do you get that adult to go over the hump of actually getting in the water and being like, okay, I'm going to learn to swim?
We have heard that it's really difficult for an adult to get over their fear of learning to swim. But I want you to think about that fear that you have and not knowing how to swim and how hard it is. And overcome that fear so that your children and your grandchildren aren't faced with that same fear when they are your age. You learning to swim will help them feel more comfortable in the water. That will help ensure that generations to come do not have the same fear that you have. And listen, there are a lot of opportunities with learning to swim, being at beaches, being at lakes, recreating around water, joining a swim team. These are incredible opportunities, and it's a sport that can carry you throughout your entire life. You can be 99 years old and in an aquatics class. You can be swimming laps. It is a sport that's so good for your body physically and mentally, and so important for families to do together. So I know it's scary. I know it's hard to think about, but to the extent that you can try to overcome that fear so that your kids and grandkids don't face that same fear, it would be such an incredible gift.
That was Megan Ferraro, Chair of the United States National Water Safety Action Plan and Executive Director of the National Water Safety Nonprofit, the Zach Foundation. Thank you so much for your time today, Megan.
Thank you, Amy.
And you've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.
Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News brings the world closer. Each morning, NPR and the WOSU News team connects Columbus.